In this two-pack, am I still able to take them at the same time? Oh. All right, so section 3, number 2 and 3, case 2530 regarding Brandy Mattson DVM and case 2531 regarding Timothy Gutkowski DVM. This is the time and place scheduled for the informal interviews of Dr. Mattson and Dr. Gutkowski in case numbers 2530 and 2531. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it at ARS 32-2234. Doctors, you can go ahead and step forward, and then if represented by counsel.
Do you want them both at the same time, or just Mattson?
We can have them both come up, and then we'll just get their summary separate.
Can it be clear which cases they're speaking on behalf of?
Yes.
Victoria?
Yes.
So I did not tell the board of Ms. Chronister's new information, and I did put it on the cloud as well.
So I'm handing it out right now.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Obviously, we haven't had time to read.
Sure, and it's not anything intensive. It's just copies of the estimates. I understand that the last board meeting there was issues about the consent and estimate regarding the NG2 placement. So that's copies of all of these owners' estimates, and then there's a screenshot of the system which shows when each of those estimates was approved.
Okay, Dr. Mattson, go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm Dr. Brandy Mattson.
And then counsel?
Danny Chronister on behalf of Dr. Mattson.
Okay, Dr. Mattson, you've received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censuring you, placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of the case. The board has read all of the materials you submitted. If you have any additional materials you'd like to present the board, please do so now, which we have. The proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly, and only one person speaks at a time. Dr. Gutkowski, would you like me to go over the summary again for you on this information? Okay, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Dr. Timothy Gutkowski.
And then counsel will say?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So we'll begin by asking the lead board member assigned to the matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you will be given an opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complainant will also be given an opportunity to address the board. If you have any additional questions for the board, or anyone giving information during this interview, you may ask them through me. Dr. Nosley, please give us a brief summary.
On April 23rd, 2024, Marcy, an 8-year-old female Pomeranian, was transferred to Arizona Veterinary Emergency and Critical Care Center, AVECCC, for continued gallbladder issues and elevated liver enzymes. The complainants expressed concerns with the care and treatment that was provided to the dog, including but not limited to administering an excessive dose of doxycycline, not diagnosing esophagitis, and placing a nasogastric tube without the complainant's consent.
Thank you. And let's see, at this time, I'd like to swear you in. So Dr. Mattson, swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes.
Thank you. And then Dr. Gutkowski, do you swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. So now we'd like to give you, Dr. Mattson, the opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant. You are counsel.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think my understanding after the last our conversation before and the concern or one of the main concerns today is whether there was consent for the feeding tube. I think that a couple of important things here. I certainly recall having a conversation with the owners outside in the courtyard with them about multiple things, including the feeding tube and the risk and benefits of the feeding.
Could you please speak up?
Yes, I spoke with the owners in the courtyard about the feeding tube and the risks and benefits of the feeding tube, especially after we were out there together. Marcy got up and started walking around, which was very encouraging because she hadn't wanted to do that, but sometimes that's one of the benefits of being outside and with the owners, and had one episode of regurgitation there. So we talked about regurgitation as well, and confirmed with them that it had been several days since she had had an appropriate amount of food. And I couldn't really tell you the exact conversation regarding the feeding tube. I have to defer back to my notes where I noted that they approved the feeding tube. And at the moment I was outside, I didn't have my computer, I didn't have any of the records to actually know that they had already approved and paid for that feeding tube on their original estimate. And so, referring back to my notes, I state in there too that they had approved it.
Thank you. And then, Dr. Bukowski.
So I could shadow some of that information because as far as when I came in for the shift on that night, on the smart flow sheet, which kind of shows your treatments and whatnot, I come in at a 7 p.m. shift, and that's where it comes on. I don't recall the exact whether I was fully involved in the placement or more, so just like the confirmation of where the tube is and what have you, as it was a little bit ago. But as far as the consent purposes, I can kind of go back to Dr. Madison's statement. And then the other big concern that we had was the doxycycline dose. So someone that started the case did have that at a higher end of the dose injectable, and I know one of the big things was concerning for the constriction stuff, which you're not going to have that concern. Eventually, when I did have that NG tube placed, I did transition back to oral through the NG tube at a lower dose to kind of the same dose that the dog Marcy was actually on before she came into me for about 2 to 3-ish weeks.
Thank you. So, anything else from council? All right. So at this time, I'd like to ask board members if they have any questions for Dr. Madison or Dr. Bitowski.
Yes. Hi. Dr. Madison, on 4/26, when did your shift start and when did it end?
7 a.m. to 2 p.m.
72. Okay. In the record we have, in fact, the only thing we have in the record, notes regarding the tube. It says owners approved placement of the nasogastric tube. And I think you just said this was an in-person communication. Okay. Then in your narrative to us, it said owners were considering whether they wanted the NG tube placed. So can you help me with that?
Clear that up for me? I honestly couldn't recall exactly what the conversation was, so I had to go back to my notes to see what that was, because we talked about so many things that day. And I have to defer to that on them actually consenting to it.
On your notes? Okay. Well, that's all we have.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you left, if you can recall, at the end of your shift, what did you think was going to happen concerning the NG tube?
It's been so long, I can't tell you what I thought back then, to be honest with you. I have to assume that what I thought is what happened, is that the tube was placed.
I guess, maybe... if you can recall, was it that you expected it to be placed, or was it that you would expected it to be placed after the owners gave consent? That's where I'm...
I think for me, that's incredibly hard for me to remember this amount of time, and so I just have to go back to my record.
That's fair. I go on with Dr. Potowski and ask questions. Okay. Hi. Did you have any direct communication with Dr. Madison?
I don't recall at that time.
Is there any rounding procedures or?
There is, but when she left, I was not there. There was another interim doctor in the middle of that. I don't recall if it was all directly from Madison or if it was from the other doctor at the time, Dr. Roy, who you'll see just their name on our smart flow tree.
So how did you receive the information or recommendation regarding the discussions with the owner concerning the two? Just the flow sheet?
Not necessarily the flow sheet, more so that it was recommended and accepted, because we're not allowed to do any treatments without owner's consent, so we don't just necessarily go forth typically and do that. So it was more so just like, this was talked about, we need to place this to help with regurgitation, to kind of help with our GRVs or gastric residual volume, to kind of help pull a lot of this fluid out, so it's not sitting in the stomach causing additional regurgitation.
So you placed that tube in the evening, I guess, and the only way I know that is from the radiographs and the midazolam listed. So in that time period then, we were trying some metoclopramide and some Entyce. Do you think that was long enough for those?
So metoclopramide is going to take some time for sure. As far as once you get it into the system, that's supposed to help with your prokinetics. Going through surgery is also going to kind of affect that with the ileus. And then the Entyce, I think that was like that last ditch effort for like the owners and whether or not that tube was going to be placed or not. Again, I can't recall exactly if that was the plan or not, but more so with the Entyce, within an hour or two, if you're not that eating, then you'll go ahead and proceed with the more advanced treatment.
Okay. Is there a description anywhere in the record of the placement? I couldn't find it.
Description in the record. We do have a sheet that tells us that we have, that we signed and everything. I don't know if it's in the exact record that you guys have or another one, but we do have like a confirmation of how it was placed.
We have is the radiograph and a listing of the midazolam dose. That's all we have.
And then you guys should have this as well. No.
Yeah, we probably have it somewhere.
There's a lot of papers.
A lot of papers.
So I think it's the very last page.
It's just like that's our checklist as we're going through that, as far as like when it was notated at the inlet, the centimeters, when it got, and what happened.
Because I know there was some question about where it was placed, and I don't have any questions about that. But that's
what you noted too is that we always confirm radiographically just to make sure you're in the right spots.
And you were interested in what was coming out of that stomach too. You wouldn't get that one. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So, did you have any communication with the complainant?
I don't recall. Overnight shifts are a little bit hit or miss on a lot of times with direct communication with the owners and everything. It's more so if they're there in person or if like emergencies were occurring at the time. But I don't recall if I had direct communication or not.
Okay. That's all I have.
Thank you. Any other questions from board members for Dr. Madison or Dr. Potowski? Okay. So we're going to go ahead and have you step back. Roger and Janet Marks, can you go ahead and step forward?
Hello.
And you're the complainants in this case?
Yes.
Okay. We have read the materials that you've provided. You can go ahead and address the board.
Okay. We were there that day. We were told that if the situation didn't improve, there may be a placement of an NG tube. That was the extent of the conversation. In terms of informed consent, we were not told anything in terms of, one, would it happen? Maybe it would happen. But please come back with additional food, things that she might like to eat that night. We came back, we found out we couldn't see her because the procedure had just been done. Informed consent means you have risks, benefits, and alternatives discussed. One, we weren't really told anything other than the fact that she had a procedure performed and she had regurgitation, and that was about it in terms of the discussion. Therefore, in terms of risks, we had no idea that we could have effect on the esophagus, whether or not there could be esophagitis at the time, what esophagitis could lead to, in order to make an informed decision. We weren't discussed benefits. We weren't discussed who would be performing the procedure. If you take a look at the checklist under all discussions, all check-offs, it's not Dr. Beskowski. It is Jada something.
Jada Barnes.
Jada Barnes, as we understand, but we can't confirm, is a non-certified tech. Had we known that a tech would perform procedure after this very, very risky procedure was performed, and the fact that she was regurgitating like crazy, etc., we would not have approved, period. But we really weren't given that opportunity. So forgetting about whether or not the medicine was correct or incorrect, we didn't get that choice. And that's basically what we're complaining about at this point. It's just not right to discuss. It's not right. It is so disjointed what we went through with the entire visit. We saw seven. I'm sorry. There were eight.
There were ten.
Ten vets that saw Marcy within a period of 5 days. In addition to probably four or five techs that were dealing with her. Yeah.
We clearly remember
The
time we spent Friday afternoon with Marcy and Dr. Madison. Dr. Madison said Marcy was almost there in terms of being ready to eat. She was sniffing at the food. Mm-hmm. She was walking around. We had absolutely no idea they were going to do that procedure. We said we'd be back. Dr. Madison said she'd alert the staff that we would be back between 7 and 8 o'clock. And we were. Actually, we don't like driving at night. We enlisted our daughter to drive us back there.
Which is an hour away.
And it's an hour away. And we sat there for close to an hour after we arrived there before they told us that we couldn't see her. She was sedated. She'd had the procedure. This was not informed consent. We recall the incident clearly. We never spoke to Dr. Batkowski. He never called us. I will say that before the surgery at Southwest Surgical Services, veterinary surgery, we got a call from the surgeon. And the surgeon told us all the things that could go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that it was a very risky procedure. We knew nothing about this procedure. Since this has happened, I've been online. I know we're not supposed to go online, but I did. There are risks to that procedure. It is possible there was additional damage to her esophagus. Later on, there was anemia. Where was the blood loss coming from? We don't know without a necropsy, but it's possible. Her esophagus was further damaged. This is just one of the concerns we have about what went on. And you only just received the information that we, or additional information that we submitted last Wednesday. Have you had a chance to read it?
What they got today was from the veterinarian.
Oh, so you got what we submitted, which included the NGNE list.
Yep.
Also, there was never a discussion versus NG versus NE. I know that the ultrasound that was provided by All-Star talked about possibility of an NE tube, not an NG. But at that point, we were just concerned about the surgery anyway. Why did it take them 48 hours to do an emergency surgery? She was there in a kennel for 48 hours before they ever got her into surgery. We should have known that. We should have been told that. We would have made other arrangements, possibly, if we had been able to find other arrangements. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, this was a clamshell from the time we got there until the time, fortunately, we got her out of there. And we got her out of there without a diagnosis of esophagitis. So it took us another week to get her the care she needed.
Just one more thing. We are unaware of anything we signed that gave permission to the NG tube. That's a very simple procedure to say, this is informed consent.
It was a casual,
yeah.
If we can't get her to eat, we'll have to consider an NG tube. That was the extent of the comment. We remember clearly, even if they claim they don't remember anything.
That's what we have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from board members for the complainants?
I think you may answer my questions.
Thank you.
I had one question. So we are provided copies of the estimates or treatment plans. So do you recall, because it looks like there were several of them, was that over phone, in person, and did you pay deposits, or how did that work?
Every time we came in...
No, we got phone calls.
I got phone
the
calls.
The first visit, you
right.
signed an estimate.
Yep.
And there's
and
nothing on there
calls.
About an NG tube, I don't believe, the one that was the initial one.
Yeah.
Okay.
After that, we got a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
And so how was that reviewed then by phone?
Oh, they just gave us an amount and put it on our credit card.
Okay, so there is no line-by-line
no
review
line.
Of each of the
no,
things
no.
that were being
no.
approved?
Never.
Okay. And so when you got the estimate phone calls, it was an amount that you were given. Was there a range given, or how was the amount determined?
We knew that it would likely be less than the amount that they quoted us.
What would be less?
That the actual charges would be less than what they estimated.
So you were given one amount, or you were given a range?
No, we were just given an amount,
and
it went on the credit card.
Okay, so you didn't see the specific line items that were addressed in these? Okay, and was that, do you remember, was that every 24 hours, every 12 hours?
I think they might have missed one day, but generally it was every day.
They wanted payment. They wanted payment in advance for the next day.
Okay. So you were given an amount that was suspected for the following day.
Correct.
Okay. And so were you given copies of the invoices every day?
No.
No.
Oh, okay. Okay. That was just a question I had. All right. We'll have Dr. Madison and Dr. Bitowski and Counselor go ahead and come back up. Dr. Madison or Dr. Budowski or counsel, do you have any additional remarks or questions you would like to ask?
I don't. I'd just like to add that I think what happened in the conversation, there's two different sides of that story going on right now. And I think that if you're considering looking at a violation based on the he said, she said nature of that conversation, that that would not be sufficient to find a violation against Dr. Madison, because there's a dispute as to what that conversation entailed and whether express informed consent was in fact gathered during that conversation. The record itself does say that the owners consented to the placement of that in G2 following that conversation. So that's the only thing that I would add. I think that's kind of what we're all looking at here. So.
And are there any more questions from board members? I do have a question. Dr. Madison, how many NG tubes do you place in practice?
Me personally?
Yes, you personally. You personally.
Generally, that is done by our technical staff.
Okay. And Dr. Petowski, how many NG tubes do you place personally?
It typically is done by our technical staff. Okay. It's rare when they can't get them and doctors will step in, but it's typically done by the technical staff.
Okay. And then as far as staffing, so Dr. Petowski, you're the responsible for this location? Okay. So as far as staffing, it was mentioned that over this period of time, there were probably 10 veterinarians and 4 to 5 technical team members that were working with this particular patient. Is that common or unusual?
Being that we're an emergency facility, we do have a lot of different doctors that'll kind of take on care. As far as the exact number that did take on, I don't recall that. I'd have to look back into the records as far as that goes. But.
Okay. And then for either of you, since I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, that your practices when it comes to estimates, so going over treatment plans, do you know frequency or who does that or how it happens?
Typically, it's either done by our client liaison, who works directly with the ICU patients. Typically, it will be done within 24-hour periods, unless the owners want smaller or longer. It all kind of depends on case to case. And when that person's not there, then typically one of our technical staff will go over that. Usually, they will go into as much detail as the owners request or want, whether that be line by line, whether that be email beforehand, whether that be in person, then just this is the dollar, yes or no type scenario.
And who prepares the these treatment plans as far as, because this is line by line, who prepares that? Is it a doctor, technical team member?
It's either their client liaison who deals with charges a lot. The doctors will advise what they want or don't want on it, and then they will formulate together. Then we look at it to confirm, yes, it looks good, and go ahead and move forward with that.
Okay. Thank you. That's all the questions I have. Any other questions from board members? Okay. So this concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. So you can go ahead and step back. So Dr. Nosley, you are the lead. I don't know which one you want to start
with. I think we can start with 2530. Before, specific to that case, just to get it out of the way, the statute says that signed authorization is necessary if general anesthesia is administered. This was just sedation, so it wouldn't be required to have a signature for placing an NG tube, just like any other IV catheter or whatever. So that's the explanation for that. This one's hard because it relies so much on a conversation. And we have two different interpretations of that conversation, one of which, they're on the respondent side, very unclear or having trouble remembering which is certainly justified, and on the other side very clear as to what was said. And if you're an owner, you're probably going to be pretty clear on what was said to you when you're making decisions about your critically ill pet at that time. And all we have in the record is owner consent, consented to the two, and we're not clear on the respondent's side, but we're clear on the complainant side, so that gives me pause. So as far as that goes, if, and I'm still not clear of what was Dr. Madison, what she expected to happen with that tube once she left. Did she expect there to be further consent, further discussion with the complainant, or was it, if this happens and this happens and it's up to the next doctor, the tube's going to be placed? But that's where I am. I'm still not clear.
Yeah, I am not either, and I don't think they are either, because recollection is bad, and it is bad when you do this day in, day out, right? Things start to run together, and it's like, I can see where memory would be bad. That's why medical records are so dang important, but I can't wrap my head around how owners of this involvement wouldn't have asked questions about the risks that would have made this conversation a longer conversation, that more people would have remembered it had it actually happened in a way that they felt they were giving informed consent. I think in this case, it's very possible that the doctor felt like she said that it might be necessary. If things aren't getting better, we're going to do it. And the owners were like, okay, like I get, we're going to get an update. As much as they went home, prepared food, and came back with the intent to see if they could get that dog to eat, to know if they were getting better. Like, there would be no reason that they were going to do that if they had felt they'd given informed consent for a procedure that they weren't going to be able to see the dog. Like, that.
And wouldn't be surprised.
And wouldn't have been surprised. So, yeah. So I guess I just go based off of not real clear medical records on what was approved, the fact that the owners are very aware that, and took action that would be in opposition to the placement of this tube, that they did not understand it, that it was informed consent. And really it is our job, I think, to make sure that owners realize informed consent. I also have concerns. I get that they don't have to sign off on the estimate, but a number is not a fair estimate in my opinion. And so, not that it necessarily rises to a level of a violation, but had somebody have gone down the list and said there's a charge for placement of a nasogastric tube, we might not be here today.
True.
And we are here because the owners don't see that they gave consent, and
yeah.
I wouldn't feel like I was giving consent if I'd approved a $2,000 bill and didn't have a clue as to what was on it. That wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, as far as the estimate goes, usually what happens is, you know, line by line, or 20-30 line, they might not even understand. It's usually when the owner goes, okay, I understand the amount, now what is that for?
Yeah, and I did, you know, hear that too, like in the questioning, like it kind of depends on the owner as to how detailed they get. Some want to email, some don't, some this, some that.
Exactly.
But as an owner, I don't know that you should be expected to have to ask. Like, I think that they thought this was normal protocol, and they wouldn't have necessarily known to say, hey, can I see that broken out? I don't know. But, like, they didn't get it broken out. It very clearly was clear that they just got a number. So I feel like, again, not that the estimate itself is an issue, but the fact that that could have prevented us from being here, it's an issue. Because I don't believe that they had informed consent. I think the hospital could have thought they did, and I don't think they did.
Yeah, it goes back to that whole conversation of having communication but ensuring understanding.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We deal with that all the time.
Mm-hmm. It's hard, too, whenever the process of the estimate is driven by what the client does or doesn't ask for in the process. So, you know, if they're happy with, you know, an amount being given, but then there were items on there that either, you know, if a doctor guides it, right, maybe somebody that's familiar with the situation may have added some things expecting we might need them. And then if they aren't needed, does the next doctor see it? Because it was approved on the estimate and kind of assumed that it was approved. I mean, you could kind of see how that
could
happen too. And having, you know, worked in a situation where, yes, there's a lot of doctors over many days I can get for clients, so that's really confusing, but it's the nature of emergency medicine that you have a lot of different doctors, typically less technical team just because of how their schedule may work, but, you know, that's a lot. And then the placing of the feeding tube, and I did ask that on purpose because I, working in that setting, it's very rare for a doctor to place a feeding tube. Mostly because technically we're typically better trained and more better versed at it than they are. And there's probably a lot of doctors that will say that just because of the frequency of placing them. And the reasoning being, and it's very different, I think, than in human medicine, that typically nutrition is really high on the list for pet recovery because of you know, healing processes and everything. And again, if they are regurging, we can actually preserve we can get the regurge off before it refluxes and they, you know, produce it. So we're actually sparing causing, you know, more issues. And so those are like really important pieces that it was probably really great that the feeding tube happened, but definitely conversation that maybe, you know, education that they didn't receive, which is part of the reason we're here. So I can see how, you know, the communication piece, there was a big hole, but
I think in cases, because in my line of work where every penny is discussed, because I work in low-cost care medicine, right? Like, you're not approving anything that is even a dollar over what you said, because that dollar may not be there. And sometimes I think what happens in cases like this, where the decision here for these owners, at least from what I'm seeing, was not based on the finances. The decision here on what was being done was based on what they felt was best for their pet. And that is where it's like, then it becomes even more critical to go line by line, because you do need them to be approved. It's not about the money in this case. And I don't often deal in that arena, but I think that that's part of the issue here.
It's always communication. It financially, there's a factor in veterinary medicine, right? But it typically is the communication piece that's the hurdle.
Do you feel there's been the assumption that because they approved verbally a total amount?
It was specifically estimated for. But if you didn't get the line by line, you wouldn't know that you approved it.
Exactly.
Which it's very feasible. Yeah, that's
kind of where I was going.
That's why it needs to be in the client communication.
Right. Well, and again,
the estimate is not the client communication.
Yeah. Well, I think there was informed consent about the NG tube because that was in the total, the last total they were given for the day, but that was not identified to them.
Right, exactly. So okay. So, you know, this one's hard. I think the tube was medically appropriate. I think the placing of it was appropriate. It's just boils down to the communication and the complaint, understanding what's going on and having a chance to make a decision based on that understanding. So I think it's a communication issue. But I think what I would like to do is, in case 2530, to make a motion to dismiss with no violation and issue a letter of concerns stating that the respondent needs to obtain clear permission from an owner prior to performing any procedure.
struggle with the letter of concern only because I feel like these owners weren't given the opportunity to determine what they wanted. And that's, that to me is a violation. That's not a, I'm concerned that you did this and maybe they would have done something different, or I feel like on something like this, it is important and they should have been given the opportunity and they should have known the risks and they should have been able to ask who's placing it and why does a technician place it and how, when can I come see my pet and why, like, I feel like all those things would have yeah. been.
But that falls in that gray area. Okay, who's going to do that? The doctors? We're talking about an emergency clinic here, and we're talking about a pretty straightforward procedure.
I don't care who does it, as long as the owners feel like they had... If a technician had done it, and...
Well, but technicians don't ask, or owners don't ask who put the IV in.
No, but I think on a procedure like this, where they weren't... indicating they wanted it done in the first place, they may have asked more questions about it.
And sure, maybe so.
They weren't given the opportunity to ask it, and I just feel like it's a big enough deal that it's not really letter of concern material, like, worthy to me. But what I struggle with in this case is, I believe in 2530, Dr. Madison actually felt like it may need to be done, and she left the clinic for the day thinking that if the dog wasn't getting better, somebody was going to do this. And I feel like Dr. Bitkowski came in and thought, okay, this has already been approved, let's go forward with it. And who's actually at fault? Is it...
Yeah, exactly.
It really, like, because I can see where both thought the other one was getting that approval and who was doing that. And that's where it's hard for me is I honestly, I don't know.
Wouldn't that be a problem with rounding? And wouldn't that rounding policy be responsibility of the responsible veterinarian?
They couldn't round because they weren't both there. You can't have rounds.
Yeah,
both there at the same time. Okay, they didn't have overlap. They were separate day.
But there are ways that can be done much better as far as here's the information I need to get to the next doctor. It can be better than owners approved. That's what we're saying. We're all saying. We all have the same problem here.
So we have a motion, but no second. So anybody want to second that motion? Or is it for 2530? No?
2530.
Okay, no second. Okay. So that one is gone. So is there another motion in case 2530?
Well, we could do, acceptable medical procedures. Well, this is not gross negligence or malpractice.
Right.
No. It's not really an administrative medical records issue where the medical records weren't documented appropriately. But I don't know what the reason why I would say no on that is I don't actually believe it happened. Okay. It wasn't that it just wasn't documented. I believe it happened. I don't believe it happened to really truly get.
Because saying we may need to do this doesn't mean we're doing this and we have permission.
Right.
Because that's, you could feel like that was a heads up. Like, hey, we may be talking about this because this may need to happen. Not, we're talking about this because I'm getting your permission right now and we're going to do it whenever.
At three.
Yeah, whenever. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's tough. And that's the thing that is hard about 24/7, right? You got to have, communication isn't always perfect, and then this adds the dimension of error, you know, and that understanding for the pet owner. So, what do we have for a motion?
We have a motion that would apply. You think would apply to everything?
And then is it under professionally acceptable procedures slash verbal interchange that you have a conversation around what the plan is and how that's going to move forward and how you're going to determine when something else, when the next step is going to happen. And it's more about the plan of the care in general as to how you even get to the approval of an NG tube.
Again, as you said, if it had been itemized in the estimate given to the owners, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, and it was definitely.
So I've got a problem with the estimate also, in that it was just a dollar amount. It didn't specify what it was for. I don't care whether it was verbal or in writing, it was just a lump sum every day, if I understand correctly.
Yeah. I think the estimate, though, was done and the amount was approved. So the estimate, not providing an estimate, wouldn't be true. There was an estimate.
Yeah. Right, that was verbal.
It was verbal, but it just didn't go through in enough detail for them to consider that informed consent.
Right.
So really the issue is the communication around the informed consent and being able to discuss the care of this case. Like, from here's when we're going to evaluate the next piece, and when we do that, here's what our next options are going to be, and here's how, like, what is the flow of this case and how is that going to work? Because I think that would have prevented both doctors from being in this position if they had had a solid plan.
Yeah.
Well, I have one question. Mark, I have a question on that came up whenever they were deliberating about so these estimates that we got weren't in order of how they were created, I'm just noticing, because they're dated the date they were printed, not the date they were created. I have a question on which one is the signed estimate, because I don't think I saw anything in the medical records that was submitted that there was a signed estimate. Can I ask if the respondents have that signed estimate?
Only the first one, but I don't know which one that was.
Well, but that's the thing. This is the first one, according to their records, is 211-869, and 211-869 has the nasogastric tube on it.
Sure. You can state the deliberations to get a clarifying evidentiary question.
Okay. Is the board, other board members okay with that?
Yes.
Okay. So can I have either counsel or Dr. Matson or Dr. Witowski that might be able to answer my question on the possession of the signed estimate?
I mean, based on the fact that the top one, the one that says ER consult case transfer, because usually that charge is the first charge that goes on there, is we're taking this case in, we're taking it in as the examine the transfer.
Yeah, it's just, but if you look at how they created these, though, the dates are, it shows this one first and then that one later. Do you see what I'm saying? Like the date order?
Yeah, the date order is weird, but the treatment plan date was the earliest. And there's a couple that say 210, but the one that has the first line item was ER consult case transfer. To me, seems like it would have been.
But that's what you can't tell, because they're both approved same day, same time. Like, it's, they're both created the same time, so I couldn't tell. That's why I'm asking.
I think on the screenshot, it's my understanding that on the screenshot it says, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to get the
The last updated would be the 24-hour hospitalization document 21-1733.
I don't know why it's in the middle of this, but the screenshot page that shows when each individual treatment plan, they have numbers. I think it's based on the ID.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the client liaison updates. I think there's various employees named here. That's what the client liaison updates when the owners are called to discuss the estimate and they get approval for the estimate.
Okay.
And I think,
I was just curious if this one was created before the other one.
It made sense that the feeding tube would have been on the first one when it wasn't placed till 2 days later.
But, well, yeah, but surgery was on here too and it wasn't done until.
Like, I just.
But it was on the same one as surgery.
It wasn't even thought that it was going to need to be happening.
But again,
I didn't even have regurgitation.
I know, but surgery was also on the same estimate.
I'm not looking at that one. I was looking at the one that, the first one that had the emergency. I see what you're saying. As far as where the feeding tube is, I don't think that was the first estimate, though. It, in answer to your question, is that the initial one they signed? I don't believe so, because that was further in, but based on the stuff that's on it. The first one, to me, looks like...
It's just hard, because none of this is like... Yeah, it's all got 2025 dates on it. So.
And I still go back. Yeah. Okay. I don't think that was the first one.
Well, then that answers my question. So I'm good. Thank you. We can go back and deliberate. Yeah, it's just odd. So, yeah, I'm not really, does anybody have a motion on?
So under R311 501, one, is that what we're looking at, that we're gonna try to fit something in here?
Well, I feel like it, to me, even outside of just having them sign off that they had agreed to informed consent, or whether it was written down that they had said yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's understanding the flow of this case and the communication around what was going to be the deciding factor as to when you had to place that tube. Right? We didn't have it when we had the conversation out in the courtyard. It sounded like they were going home to get more food to come back, feed it, and the doctor was leaving. It was the end of her shift. And there was nothing that clearly said, okay, this is how, if the dog doesn't eat by when you come back and give the food and that we still don't get him eating now, we're going to look at placing. Or if the dog continues to regurgitate, or if the dog shows this is when we're going to do it. Like, it's more around...
It was also some recollection of the owners are going to consider this.
Yeah, and I get how that happens in emergency cases.
This is exactly where I was when I was deciding whether this was a violation of it.
I know.
Right where we are right now.
Because it's hard to say you're going to really cover that level of detail in every single case and every single thing. Like, right, it's easy to look back and say, well, you should have done that. But it's hard. I just feel like these owners were clearly understanding something very different than what happened.
Yeah, I think we all.
And that's where I have somebody drop the ball on that.
Whether that's a letter of concern or a violation, that's where we're at. I think everybody agrees.
Yeah, and to me, it's beyond a letter of concern. I think owners need to know what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, so I could try and make a motion. I didn't look anything up, but I could do R311, 3222, 32, number 12, as it relates to R311-5011 for planning of the case and communication with the owner about what was going to happen and when and if a feeding tube needed to be given to make sure that they had the informed consent and had gone over that with the owner before placing the tube.
Yeah. Can we get that?
That motion.
Okay, I'll second that.
I have a motion and a second. Find the violation. Roll call.
No.
No.
No, we're good on
no, we're
the
good.
Voice.
Oh,
it's
okay.
The order.
Oh, okay. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, and then 2531.
So will that work for 31 also? Because it's basically exactly the same
thing. It's basically the same thing, and then I would add on to that as the premise holder, like, communication between doctors and rounding and all that always falls under the premise holder. Like, it I being a premise holder at an emergency clinic has got to be one of the hardest jobs there is. So, I kudos to them, but sometimes I feel like it's not, I don't want to say taken seriously, but it's doctors don't realize the amount that they could be held accountable to and the importance of ensuring that this stuff is being handled by everybody, by staff, by doctors, by everybody. And to me, that would be more, the violation would still stand the way we wrote it before, but I would also add in that as a premise holder, know that that is something that you're held accountable to.
Are we okay with putting in a motion regarding the premise holder and their responsibilities in this motion about the consent of the two? Because this is a, you know, this
is a
different issue.
Or you leave the motion alone, leave it the same, and then just as a, you know, comment or a letter, not a letter of concern, but a point of concern is just being aware that as the premise holder, these are things that you need to constantly be on, because a breakdown in communication is going to land here every time.
So, just for you guys, I think I figured out the order of things. The estimate with the surgery had the NG tube on it that was approved on the 24th, so not the day of admit, like you said. But the NG tube wasn't placed until sometime on the 27th. So,
it still wasn't a line item estimate that they would have approved, going, oh, why are you placing it?
Right, but I'm just saying it was days before it actually, the actual conversation happened and it was done. So
I mean,
Would
you say from emergency practice that that's typical? You're kind of guessing what might come down in the next 24 hours and that's what's going on your estimate? But you don't really know?
But that's why
I'm like, I'm not 100% sure that would have been informed consent anyway.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you guess it might happen, but then it's not going to, like you haven't had a discussion, then it wouldn't have just ended up on a treatment sheet at that instant, you know?
Well, and that might be why the bill has, like, it might be lower, because we're putting things on here that we may not end up doing, and then, so really when estimates are given, it's like...
Sometimes they're template-driven, too.
I don't believe that replaces a point of consent.
If we're going to do this, we're going to do this.
No, I was just trying to understand why did somebody think it was approved if it got put on an estimate and it made it to orders, because that can happen. You know, you get an estimate approved, it goes on to orders, but if that wasn't
three
the
days
true,
prior.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been sitting there for
that makes sense.
3 days. So.
So the NG tube was placed before it was approved.
No, there was an estimate created with it on it, but it was the estimate for surgery, which was 3 days prior to it actually being placed.
Oh, 3 days prior, okay.
Yeah. So it just doesn't match, but
all right.
That makes it more difficult, you know, to track back. So, yeah. Okay.
So if we have the same
motion
here, do we need to restate it, or do you...
Yes.
Okay, so in the case of 2531, it's 32-22-32, number 12, as it relates to R311-5011 for professionally acceptable procedures and communication with the owners around the stepwise working of this case and what was going to happen when and when things were going to trigger something else, and ensuring that we had informed consent for the procedures that were done. And then I would just add my comment that as a responsible vet, this is a really big concern.
Second.
So a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All's in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. This concludes this matter. Dr. Madison and Dr. Pinkowski, you will receive a written confirmation of the board's action shortly. At next month's meeting, the board will consider adopting proposed findings of facts and conclusions of law. After doing so, we'll then discuss and adopt disciplinary action. If you have any questions, please call the board's executive director.